The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
The choice cannot be clearer. It just can't. I don't know how it could. To me, the choice is, yes, he is an authoritarian figure. And just because it didn't work last time, doesn't mean it won't work this time. If it weren't for Mike Pence, we very well could have created 14 days of chaos in this country that would have led to an election in the House of Representatives that would have taken a free and fair election away from President Biden. Yes, he's a creepingly authoritarian figure, and therefore I'm going to vote. I may disagree about policy. I may disagree about this or that with Vice President Harris. But let's be clear. Vice President Harris is not going to send a mob to the Capitol and try to disrupt the peaceful transfer of power. If he wins, maybe this is who we are. And maybe that's the complicated, terrible reality we're going to have to confront. But let's try not to be that country.
The regime is panicking. All they have left is all they've had the last 4 years, and that's January 6th. They're the day that they worship. Everything revolves around that day when they talk about Donald Trump. They spread so much fake news about it, nobody can fact check them. They are the final say of what happened that day. Mr. Fleury talked about just how they act like it was an armed insurrection. And there are no pictures of anybody taking any guns to the armed insurrection. The last bit, though, of that clip, that's John Meacham, the historian. And I'll just read it again. If he wins, Donald Trump, maybe this is who we are. And maybe that's the complicated, terrible reality we're going to have to confront. But let's not try to be that country. What if in a democracy, the people elect their leader? And Meacham says there, I just hope that's not the country that we are actually living in. And then what are we going to do about it? They couldn't even just wait 4 more years. I mean, think about it. Where we are right now, this would be the end of Donald Trump's second term. That would be 8 years. And they are so desperate. They are panicking. They can't risk another 4 years of President Trump. It's self-preservation for them. It's too risky. I mean, the message even that he's sending to people there, we know better than you. You're just MAGA deplorables. And you know, what if we have to face the terrible reality that America wants Donald Trump? They're the minority there over on MSNBC. And they're panicked about it. They don't want to be exposed. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. We are in Auburn, New York. Just like yesterday, we are recording this in a hotel room. If you have any comments for the show, you can send those to td@thetrumpet.com. I really wanted to do the show yesterday. I so badly wanted to talk about President Trump going to my least favorite restaurant, McDonald's. But what a awesome picture that was. What a funny experience that was. I saw one person on there saying that President Trump needs to start his own franchise and call it MAGA Donald's. Instead of getting to talk as much about the McDonald's visit, I get to talk about the unfunny and radical, awkward, irritating, condescending Kamala Harris campaign. I mean, again, look at the contrast. They were 2 months ago, couldn't stop talking about joy, how much joy Kamala was bringing because she brought Beyonce up on stage. I saw at her recent campaign, they had the another pop star have to come out just to hype everybody up. And then it was just the dullest, most boring little conversation that Kamala had up there. So Mr. Fleury got to talk about all of the fun stuff that President Trump was doing. President Trump having fun, just being a normal guy, working the deep fryer at McDonald's. And then I'll get to give you the latest update on the Kamala campaign. But I, of course, do have to comment on the French fries and how the regime media is still melting down over this moment. Here is another clip. This is from MSNBC. They're talking about Donald Trump, of course, as usual. Like Mr. Fleury said, don't they ever get bored of talking about President Trump? And notice the conclusion of this clip. It's a little longer, but again, I just thought it was funny how President Trump visiting McDonald's and working there for 15 minutes has just sent these people over the edge. This is clip six.
Susan, Trump has kind of dodged or failed to expand and get specific on economic policies when he's been pushed to. We saw it at the Economic Club in Chicago as well. Is that a potential turn off for some Republicans, do you think?
Let's put it this way. The Republicans who really don't want to vote for Donald Trump but aren't happy with the choice of Vice President Harris, I think these kind of answers cement their feelings about not voting for Donald Trump. And the reason is because he can't be specific. The best he gets is, I have a concept of a plan. That's all he can offer. And these are serious times. And I agree with Basil, showing the side-by-side, whether it's at a rally of Donald Trump and herself or their economic plans or anything else, it shows that we've got to focus. We've got 15 days left. Who are you going to put back? Who are you going to put in the White House? Who is going to take our country forward and not be a danger to the core of our democracy?
Just say very quickly, Donald Trump trolls people. But the fact that he's trolling Kamala Harris on her past job experience is not unlike what he did with Barack Obama, trolling him on whether or not he was actually born in the United States of America. So when he decides that he wants to put up black folks in front of the camera to say, these guys are with me, I just want to make sure that folks remember or think about as they see this, that he does not care about you. Nope. He cares about the stereotype of you because even your past work experience to him can be called into question and is not valid. And
how dare Donald Trump question her past? She's allowed to say whatever she wants about her past because that's her truth, right? Obama did the same thing. And when he gets fact checked, they find out, well, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. Well, it's an emotional truth. It helped define me, but it didn't actually happen. For Donald Trump to question Kamala, well, no one knows if she worked there. And he and that man there saying, well, it's just like the birtherism, which there was a lot to that as well. I mean, why did it take so long to produce that document? And I guess at the very least, you could say they did at least produce a document. With Kamala McDonald's, there's nothing there except she said it and no one else knows whether or not it's true. So for President Trump to come and question it, of course, they fall back on he's racist. That lady saying there that he's a danger to the core of our democracy. The man at the deep fryer, the man with the red tie wearing the apron, he's the one that they point the finger at and say all of these crazy things. He's going to send you to the camps. Now, on the other side, if President Trump tells a story about his past, you've got the fact-checking hounds released on him to go find every person in his past. I mean, with the Steele dossier, they were sending journalists over to, Prague, to go find out if he stayed at that hotel. I mean, they would stop at nothing to fact-check every little detail about President Trump, but Kamala, Obama, Biden, they're allowed to just say their truth. And that's the authority, apparently. Well, Kamala's campaign said she worked at McDonald's. End of discussion. Well, of course her campaign is going to say it. Think about that CBS interview. Think about Leslie Stahl with President Trump back in 2020. And he's bringing up facts about the Biden laptop. And Leslie Stahl replies, no, that's not true. No. This is 60 Minutes. We only report facts. We can't say that on our show. they're caught red-handed editing and doctoring that Kamala Harris interview. I mean, it's just their facts. President Trump, he cannot escape anything. All he did on his Twitter account was post the picture of him waving out the drive-through window. Didn't even put a comment on it. Just him waving in the apron. And there's a community fact check on it. I'm assuming just a bunch of Democrats got on there and colluded to get this fact check on there. And the fact check just reads, this was a staged event in a closed down restaurant. He gets fact checked for that when we all know that's what happened. But Kamala visiting that Italian restaurant in Pittsburgh, having the whole restaurant closed down, bussing in a bunch of fake supporters, and having them sit down in the restaurant and pretend like they were just out for dinner with their family, that doesn't get fact-checked. I mean, if you said that at the time, it's just a conspiracy theory. I mean, it's an upside-down world. You can't believe anything they say. The New York Times, how these people take themselves this seriously, they have to live just the most miserable, boring lives if they are this sensitive. This is the New York Times, the title of this article, Trump, slinging fries and smearing Harris, takes turn behind a McDonald's counter. Says, when it was time to bag the order, he asked a woman at the drive-thru what they did when a customer wanted more salt. I love salt, he said, as he shook some onto golden potatoes. Then, after spilling some, he paused to throw some over his shoulder in a nod to superstition, a seconds-long gesture that would have most likely been unappreciated by efficiency-loving managers had Mr. Trump been any other employee. It was fake. It was staged. It's so obviously not real. I'm just waiting for morning meltdown to come on and just get into all the nitty-gritty details about Trump at the deep fry. He's holding the pan wrong. That was too much salt. What is that going to do to his arteries? How could he do this? What an example he's setting. I mean, like, if President Trump was an actual McDonald's employee, he would have been fired in 2 minutes, fact checkers say. They can't just enjoy the 13 minutes of a billionaire throwing on the apron and deep frying some potatoes. Trump is winning in the campaigns. He's winning the social media campaign. The left talks a lot about how campaigning in the 21st century, it's different. You've got to win on social media, and Trump is producing the images, and Trump is producing the 30-second clips, and it drives them crazy because they're supposed to be the young party. They're supposed to be the tech party that gets it, that gets the young voters. This is a clip of Kamala. Okay, so the contrast. Trump is at McDonald's and he played the montage. There are thousands of people lining the street to see him do this. Honestly, when I saw the pictures, I thought it was AI. They're the funniest AI pictures of President Trump. And you can't make this up. It's reality. He actually went and did that. So you've got all of these people. They just think it's hilarious. They think it's so relatable. And Kamala Harris, she's hitting the campaign trail. I mean, we are 2 weeks out. And this is when it's supposed to ramp up. You're doing 3 or 4 rallies a day. You're in the swing state. She's out there with Liz Cheney. She's doing, I think it's 3 days with Liz Cheney at each event. And notice what Kamala said. It's so obvious how jealous she is. This is clip one.
In many, many ways, Donald Trump is an unserious man. But the consequences of him being president of the United States are brutally serious. There are things that he says that will be the subject of skits and laughter and jokes.
Yes, it's hilarious. Where has she been the last 8 years? Everything he does is the subject of skits and laughter and jokes. But he can also be very serious, and he's also very relatable. She's over there, again, I'm not going to comment on the audience, but she's there with Liz Cheney. This was 2 months ago, you know, the second coming of Obama. This was 2008. And there she is. Trump, it's just very hard to take him seriously. Would you want the president of the United States to be someone who goes and serves fries to the American people at McDonald's? One must be serious, right? She always says, one must be serious if one wants to run for president of one's country. That's very educated Kamala assessment on President Trump. I mean, President Trump, he's funny. He's relatable. You always see clips. All the comedians are always impersonating that night when he announced that the ISIS leader was killed. And he comes out there and just in the least politically correct terms talks about how al-Baghdadi was killed. It's probably the funniest clip out there. And then it contrasts it with Obama using all the politically correct, boring, uncolorful language to describe it. And there's nothing memorable about that. Obviously, Kamala there is jealous. She couldn't do any of this. She's not relatable because she's fake. She's fake. She puts on a show. When she tries to be relatable, it's so obvious that it's an act. I was thinking about how dramatic this year has been, how dramatic it's going to be. We have the dramatic July 13th photos of the Trump assassination attempt. And then would you believe it that actually October 20th, the photo op at the drive-thru might be the kicker that seals the election for President Trump throwing on the apron? Drudge had this headline, McDonald's stunt enough to keep him out of jail, win election. And then it links to this article from this far left radical who says, well, I'll read a little bit of it to you. It's from The Independent. The article's titled, "Is This the Publicity Stunt That Secures the White House for McDonald Trump?" And he's totally far left. He writes, "Fascistic, babyish, menacing monster that he is, the Donald Trump we saw in the footage of him visiting a McDonald's yesterday came across as somewhat genuine and relatable, even if he wore cufflinks while handing out Happy Meals." He writes, "Donald aced the fries, as he might put it, and managed to hand over huge bags of fast food to stunned customers without swearing." That's a bigger... don't need to read all of this. Very self-righteous. He didn't demean anyone or threaten them with... Boy, I didn't read all of these paragraphs. They just are so full of themselves. Okay, he concludes this bit and says, "Dare I say it, McTrump was almost charming." Brian Stelter said it the other day after the big charity ball that Kamala Harris didn't go to. He's on CNN. They're having the roundtable discussion following the event. And I think it was Abby Phillips looks over at Brian Stelter. "What did you think?" And he's almost gushing and says, "Oh, don't ask me. You can't ask me. I actually thought it was funny. I thought he was really relatable." Brian Stelter is the most annoying commentator out there. Maybe not the most, but he's definitely up there. And says, "Don't ask me. I thought it was funny. I thought it was relatable." I mean, we know how these events are going to work out. We know Donald Trump is going to be back in office, but it's pretty enjoyable and comical at times to see the events that are working out to get him back in there. I mean, July 13th obviously is the most dramatic, but the October 20 deep fryer event, I mean, he won the media that day. He won over the hearts of Americans with that photo op. This is another far-left commentator. I think he runs, it's the Young Turks. I can't say his name. It's Turkish, I'm assuming. He tweeted, "Some in the press called Trump's McDonald's photo op bizarre. This is how you lose credibility. That was a home run photo op. He looked like a real person there connecting with the average American. If you can't see that, you're totally blind." Again, today, as I'm recording this, Donald Trump visits North Carolina. I think that's his second or third visit down to the area devastated by Hurricane Helene. He was one of the first ones there down in Georgia after the disaster to boost morale. And then he's in North Carolina. And this is the day after he's in Pennsylvania working the shift at McDonald's. I would be exhausted after working a shift and going to another football game. And then he's flying down to North Carolina. When does he sleep? I mean, what an exhaust. He's so exhausted, like Mr. Fleury was saying yesterday. just an exhausted campaign. And then that's the morning meltdown take, is that President Trump is exhausted. And you've got all these fun events. You've got people chanting USA, looking at him at a Pittsburgh Steelers game. And then the contrast is Kamala Harris sitting with a sit down with Liz Cheney. I mean, I cannot think of a more boring campaign stunt than pulling out Liz Cheney. So, of course, we have to play a few clips from Kamala. She was in Detroit. She has, her name is Lizzo, another pop star. That's the only way she can bring the joy back, is to trot out the celebrities. But I thought this clip was interesting, just talking about leadership and Kamala. Now she's trying to act very presidential. The rap music is gone, even though, you know, she sounds inebriated most of the time she's talking. She's in terms of and says one must wonder all the time. And here's her take on leadership and how the president needs to be a lot more dignified if he's going to hold that office. This is clip four.
The president of the United States must set a standard, not only for our nation, but understanding the standard that we as a nation must set for the world. You know, we as representing the United States of America walk into rooms around the world with the earned and self-appointed authority to talk about the importance of democracy, rule of law, and have been thought of as a role model, imperfect though we may be, but a role model of what it means to be committed to certain standards, including international rules and norms, but also standards of decorum.
That clip was longer than it needed to be, I'll admit, and I kind of zoned out halfway through it. But talking about leadership, talking about, oh, the president suddenly needs to have decorum. But then I thought it was funny because that's another word salad, and now it's just so easy to zone out when she's just stringing together all these fluff words. But then the next day, you know, she's coming out and she tries to clean up that statement a little bit. This is clip two.
So I've now, as vice president, met over 150 world leaders, presidents, prime ministers, chancellors, and kings, many of them multiple times, to the point we're on a first name basis. And the last few times I've seen them in the relative eve of this election, they are very concerned, our allies. Because as you know, when we walk in those rooms around the world representing the United States of America, we have traditionally been able to walk in those rooms, chin up, shoulders back, with the self-appointed and earned authority to talk about the importance of democracy and rule of law. But as all the role models here know, as a role model, people watch what you do to see if it lines up with what you say. People around the world are watching this. And I tell you, sometimes I do fret a bit about whether we as Americans truly understand how important we are to the world.
It's so condescending. She ends, if you're watching it, with this big smirk like she's talking to a bunch of preschoolers. I just wonder if you realize how important you are to the world. And she's trying to act like this great statesman or woman, stateswoman, whatever you want to call it. I've met 150 leaders and we're on a first name basis. And we should be able to walk into the room, chin up, shoulders back. Another contrast, another visual, if you want to talk about that. Remember President Trump? I think it was a NATO meeting. He's walking down the middle of all of these leaders, and he wants to be front of the pack, to where he grabs another leader's shoulder, pulls him back, and then just pops himself up front to demonstrate to the world that America's first. And then there's another clip of President Biden. I think it's the leader of Indonesia or somewhere like that. They show the side-by-side of this leader meeting President Trump, and he's very effusive and shaking his hand and praising President Trump. And then it shows Joe Biden meeting that same leader, and the guy rolls his eyes at him and turns away from him as Biden tries to shake his hand and shuffles after him. I mean, they know who's in charge. They know what leader they have to respect. This campaign, they know they're losing. Obama knows it. They are probably organizing all of the November 6th rioting right now. You look at how close we are. It's supposed to be ramping up, and the October surprise that we have, General Milley called President Trump a fascist. Fantastic. Welcome to, or meet Joe Scarborough every morning. And then what was the other October surprise? Oh, yeah. President Trump sent Putin a COVID test. What a joke. I mean, President Trump is supposedly Vladimir Putin's puppet. So the puppet master calls him up and asks for COVID tests. Donald, please send me some COVID tests. I need to test your loyalty. I mean, even that story, let's just assume it's true for their sake, to entertain Joe Scarborough for a little bit. What if President Trump is playing like 5D chess and he's sending him, you know, COVID tests, and it's like Cold War statecraft, and the COVID tests are bugged, or they give you this false positive because he wants to send the president or the leader of Russia into quarantine? Or what if they're poisoned? I don't know. But maybe there's something more to it. What did the COVID test cost? $8? It's hard for me to believe that. I mean, maybe I haven't even, it's hard to follow these stories. Maybe he was asking for tests for the citizens, or maybe the way they make it sound was like Putin wanted personal COVID tests from Donald Trump. So he called him up and said, can you mail me 3 or 4 of those? I don't know. The Democrats, they're the known entities. The rest of the world looks at them and they know they're predictable. They will sell out their country. And of course they want them to win because it works out for them. They're very predictable and they're very reliable for America's enemies. Donald Trump, he's a bit more unpredictable. And President, remember, January 3rd, 2020, before all the COVID, just a drone strike on Qassem Soleimani. We'll talk about Israel in a little bit. Donald Trump getting NATO to pay up. Donald Trump talking about the Nord Stream pipeline. That's not a story that the American press cares about. And looking and calling out Germany and saying, why are you paying Russia billions of dollars to get oil and natural gas from them when we, your ally, would send it to you? You're strengthening that nation. Of course President Trump doesn't announce his plans. Why should he have to tell everyone how he's going to deal with it? And we have the receipts. We have 4 years of President Trump with no wars. And then we've got 4 years of Joe Obama with Afghanistan and Ukraine and October 7th. Listen to this clip of the warmonger Liz Cheney campaigning. This is supposed to be a campaign. You're supposed to be getting people excited. This is clip 5.
If you look at the numbers of the most senior officials who served Donald Trump, his own vice president, national security advisors, his chief of staff, the leading generals who served him, who've all said he's unfit. And people really need to stop and think about how completely unprecedented that is. And the idea, when people sort of say, well, we might, you know, be tempted for some reason or another to vote for Donald Trump. If the issue is foreign policy, I would just ask everyone, think about how dangerous and damaging it is to have someone who's totally erratic, completely unstable, someone who has aligned himself with, who idolizes tyrants. He idolizes tyrants. You know, the choice here with respect to national security policy is a man who has proven, he's absolutely proven that he will not stand up, he won't defend this nation with respect to our own Constitution and rule of law. And Vice President Harris, who has been clear in terms of support for Ukraine, in terms of recognizing and understanding across the board that America cannot maintain our own freedom and security if we walk away from our allies around the world. And our adversaries know that they can play Donald Trump.
She's right about the part that this is unprecedented. It's unprecedented that all of those people would betray the President of the United States. And those people, General Milley, I don't think he's ever been on a ballot. He's never been elected. All of these people speaking out, they're deep staters. It is unprecedented, and it's what people want. They want someone who will stand up to that establishment. She says he idolizes tyrants. Maybe he, in a chaotic world, is trying to play their game to get what's best for his nation, instead of just bowing down to Russia and China and Iran. And she says there, she doesn't even mention Israel. She talks about Kamala's support for Ukraine, but won't comment about what Kamala thinks about Israel. And then to say our adversaries know they can play Donald Trump. How do we know that he's not playing them? How do we know that he's not flattering them to get them to trust him, to get something out of him or them? I mean, that's statecraft. That's how it works. Think about President Trump when he was dealing with the leader of the Taliban, and he has this sit down with him, and he brings the satellite imagery of this guy's hideout where his family is, and he just puts it on the table and doesn't say anything. Don't shoot our soldiers. And then he just lays that piece of paper down on the table. Kamala, Biden, Obama, they're over there constantly having these unauthorized illegal leaks that reveal all of Israel's plans to combat and fight these terrorists. I wanted to read this article. It's from the Wall Street Journal. It's from October 18th, and they had this sit-down interview, the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. And a lot of this has come up before, but this is leadership in a lot of ways. He talks about dealing with the border and talks about you have to speak in a way that deters people from coming. So if they are illegal and they are going to get a job, well, you've got to say they're going to be prosecuted for that, and that the businesses who hire them are going to be prosecuted, and that deters people from coming over. The journal says the implication is that, I don't need to read all of that one, I'll get to where he's talking about dealing with the leaders of Russia and China. This author says such an approach is also evident when Trump discusses his conduct of foreign affairs, talking about how he doesn't reveal all of his cards. You know, he speaks in a way that's going to deter that action, and then he will often back it up with action. This interviewer asks how Mr. Trump would persuade Xi Jinping to stand down from a blockade of Taiwan. Trump says, oh, very easy. I had a very strong relationship with him. He was actually a really good, I don't want to say friend, I don't want to act foolish. He was my friend, but I got along with him great. He stayed at Mar-a-Lago, so we got to know each other great. He's a very fierce person. Then he talks about this visit in April 2017 and how the United States started bombing Syria while Xi Jinping was there with President Trump. And there is reports that the Chinese military had a presence there in Syria, not far from the area that was being bombed. And that was supposed to be a total secret. But while Xi Jinping is there with President Trump, he lets him know, hey, they're bombing a few of these locations in Syria, just so you know. He looks at President Xi, telling him about the bombing. I said, President, you've just shot 58 missiles into Syria to an airport that's housing a lot of new planes. Your people, talking to Xi, are not at risk, but they're on their way right now. He hears it and goes, this is Xi. Repeat. And then Trump says, you speak English, don't you? And then the author says, until then, the two men had communicated with the aid of an interpreter. I mean, that's a power move right there. Putin, all of them, they want to speak to that interpreter because they don't want to speak English. But this moment got so tense that President Trump looked him in the eye and said, you speak English. President Trump says, I repeated it and he understood it. He sat like this. He's a good poker player. First, it looked like he was furious, right? I repeated it again. Oh, okay. Then we got back to it and he was pretty cool, but he's a fierce guy. They all know. They can all read it. And then Mr. Trump talks about Taiwan. He says, if you go into Taiwan, I'm sorry to do this. I'm going to tax you, talking about tariffs, at 150 to 200%. threatens to even shut down trade. And then the interviewer says, well, would you use military force against a blockade on Taiwan? Trump says, I wouldn't have to because Xi respects me and he knows that I'm crazy. They don't want to risk it because he is unpredictable. Why would you show all of your cards when you're playing a match with these dictators? The article says Vladimir Putin knows it too. And Mr. Trump's telling, I said to Putin, Vladimir, we have a great relationship. I got along with him great. He's a different kind of a character. I will tell you, much different than anybody. I knew him very well. But I said, Vladimir, if you go after Ukraine, I'm going to hit you so hard, you're not even going to believe it. I'm going to hit you right in the middle of Moscow. We're friends. I don't want to do it, but I have no choice. And then he says, Putin looks at him and says, no way. And Trump says, way. You're going to be hit so hard, and I'm going to take those expletive domes right off your head because you know he lives under the domes. Trump does not care about you. He cares about the stereo. Oh, that's, I copied that from another clip anyway. But he's unpredictable, and he stands up for his country. I mentioned the Soleimani assassination. And Kamala talks about Ukraine, but she won't talk about supporting Israel. I bet President Trump, he could fix that war. Both of them. Because you have strength and you threaten to use it. You go after things like oil in the case of Germany and Russia. And then Kamala's take. Kamala, she's at a rally and she has this protester stand up and say that Israel's committing genocide in Gaza and goes on and on. And then they escort this protester out. But Kamala's response was, what he's talking about is real, and I respect his voice. That Israel is probably the United States' greatest ally in the world. Maybe the UK. And then at a previous rally, there are some protesters at Kamala's rally that stood up and they said, Christ is king. And her response was, you're at the wrong rally. I'm talking about world events, you probably saw the news about the leader of Hamas, Yahya Sinwar, being killed pretty much on accident. I mean, it was incredible how they found him and the events that led to him being killed. And if you're Israel right now, you've got to be pretty bold. I mean, that is an intense endorsement. And this is coming, you know, the United States, Biden, Kamala both said, don't go into Rafah, don't go into Rafah. They have all of these intel leaks that reveal Israeli troop movements. I mean, they'll talk about how bad it is for Donald Trump to steal the presidential napkins. They were classified napkins. We've got to have an FBI raid. And here they are putting actual troops in an active combat zone at risk because they want to deter. And really, they want to bully Netanyahu into getting out of there. The United States is led by a regime that hates Israel. This is the Associated Press. The U.S. is investigating an unauthorized release of classified documents on Israel's Iran attack plan. The AP says the United States is investigating an unauthorized release of classified documents that assess Israel's plan to attack Iran, three U.S. officials told the Associated Press. I mean, they're acting like they're going to crack down on these leaks. They're quote-unquote authorized. Nobody would do that behind Joe Obama's back without him signing off on it. It says the documents, which are marked top secret, were posted to the Telegram messaging app and first reported Saturday by CNN and Axios. The officials spoke on the condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to discuss the matter publicly. Just somebody got a hold of these documents, leaked them, and now Iran knows exactly what Israel's going to do. I mean, if you're Israel, probably the wisest thing you can do is start lying to the United States of America in secret and start giving them fake news and then see and follow how that lie gets leaked. Because if you can do that, then you can trace the avenue and find out who's doing it. And you'll find out it's that whole administration. I mean, they can leak information that does actually harm soldiers. But if President Trump takes the napkins, it's an FBI raid. I mean, what a tumultuous world. What a chaotic world. And people see the contrast. They see Kamala and they see Trump. Now, not everything Trump does is perfect, but it's certainly a lot better than the alternative. It's an exciting time. There's the war in the Middle East, there's a war in Europe, there's a lot of drama unfolding, and there's certainly more to come in the few months of this year. I wanted to hit this one story just for a couple minutes. It's about the European Union, and they're struggling. They're struggling with migrants. They're struggling economically. Germany is struggling. This is an article that spiked by Fraser Myers titled "The Slow Implosion of the EU Project." It says, over on the continent, even ardent Europhiles are sounding the alarm about the EU's mounting problems. French President Emmanuel Macron warned earlier this month that the EU faces a mortal threat from economic decline. Talks about how Germany and Poland are closing off their borders and getting a lot more strict with immigration. Talks about the rise of the right. Talks about the climate scams and how they're not working and how it's hurting the economies in these nations. Then there's obviously the war in Ukraine and the Middle East. It's this convention of crises. And when that happens, that's what leads to these strongmen coming up. Germany, they're not going to go down quietly. They're not going to relinquish control. This article says, if you only look at averages across 27 member states, you can miss some of the real economic horror stories. Astonishingly, the economies of Italy, Spain, and Greece are actually smaller today than they were in the late 2000s. Southern Europe was battered by the euro crisis and EU-mandated austerity measures in the 2010s, and it has never recovered since. It even talks about Germany and their industry getting hit. And remember Mr. Armstrong and what Mr. Gerald Fleury have said about Europe and how an economic crisis is going to be what forges the Holy Roman Empire, that seventh resurrection. That article concludes, the news coming out of the EU lately has been relentlessly bleak. We see Europe's economy stagnating. We see it struggling to cope with mass migration. The EU is clearly not the economically dynamic, politically stable bloc its elite Remainer supporters like to make it out to be. In truth, it is a crumbling empire whose founding principles are being relentlessly questioned, even by its most ardent fans. Brussels is the source of many of Europe's woes, not their solution. Well, it might not literally be Brussels, but there will be a unifying force in Europe. You need thetrumpet.com. You need Bible prophecy to navigate these events. And no one in America cares about the EU. No one's talking about that. We need Bible prophecy. And it's awesome to watch these events unfold. And we need Bible prophecy just to know where to look. There's no one in the United States. I mean, President Trump was warning about Nord Stream, but nobody fears a resurgent Germany. We have to have Bible prophecy to navigate these events, to get through them. And if you don't have that, I mean, you don't have a strong foundation. You're going to be all over the place. I wanted to talk a little bit about education. I mentioned that we're recording a lot of these programs ahead of time because we're at the Feast of Tabernacles. This is a time period that pictures a thousand-year reign of Jesus Christ on this earth, when this world will be ruled by God's government, when God's law will be enforced, when Satan is bound up, when human nature is changed, when humanity is going to live the give way instead of the get way. If you haven't, we have a book, Mr. Armstrong wrote it, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. And these days that we're here, 7 days, picturing a perfect world. Request that book if you haven't. You can ask for it at td@thetrumpet.com. But we've got to, you know, look at the real world like we've heard in some messages here. It's a totally different world than what we have now. People keep trying to fix or patch up this world, but they're not asking the fundamental questions. They're not going any deeper. I remember a few years ago, I was in my early 20s and I was reading this book about economics. So of course I knew everything about economics because I was in my early 20s and I read a little bit of a book about economics. And I was talking to my dad about, well, how's the economy going to function in a perfect world. So there's certainly still going to be competition, because how else are you going to determine who gets the product or who's going to buy that home? There has to be competition. And he said, well, you've got to remember that human nature is going to be totally different. People are going to have or be living the give way. This world is focused on get. What's the best deal I can get? The seller is thinking, what's the most money I can get? But think of a world that's totally different, where you're thinking about buying something, but, well, is that fair to the seller? Am I giving to the other person who wants it? Maybe they need it more than I do. Maybe I'll wait and God will bless me in some other way. I mean, it's a total transformation. Christ isn't going to come and patch up some things in this world. He's not going to go to Washington, D.C. and, you know, give some tips about how to get a bill through Congress. It's a total transformation. People see that there are problems. And it's right. They for them to want solutions. They see problems and they want to fix them, but they're not asking those fundamental questions. I was thinking about that when I saw this story about a new college that's being raised up in Austin, Texas. This is an article from the Free Press. It's titled, A Revolution Begins in Austin, Texas. Now, the founder of this university, they see that there's a huge problem in modern education and they want to fix it. And they see, rightly so, that education plays a big role in that. And this is from the founder of that college. I think it just opened this year. He says, ours is a revolutionary institution, revolutionary in the proper sense. False revolutions propose only the tearing down of the established order. They are an exercise in nihilism. Yet the word revolution, in its original sense, revolvere, means to revolve, to turn back to a point of origin with the purpose of renewing an original spirit or ideal. To what are we returning, he writes. Not to some pallid vision of what universities looked like a decade or two or three ago, before their current malaise. Not to some nostalgic notion of ivy-covered quads and dusty don or fusty dons. Our return is even more radical. Radical in the sense of radix, roots, and that we are returning to the very roots of the Western intellectual tradition. To the very roots of the civilization that brought forward these extraordinary institutions called universities. Now, again, it's admirable what he's trying to do there, but is a return to Western intellectual tradition going to solve these problems? I mean, at best, he's just looking at the timeline and he's rolling it back 100 or 200 years instead of addressing, well, what's the course that got us to where we are right now? He writes, we are returning to a time when living the life of the mind we are returning to a time when living the life of the mind was itself a bold adventure, when the world was afire with contending and clashing ideas, when everything under the sun was scrutinized and measured and queried, which gave birth to a civilization that was restless and curious and risk-taking, a Promethean civilization that sought the light of truth even when that light was searing or sometimes even blinding. Higher education is often referred to blandly as the academy or academia. This occludes how extraordinarily talks about the origin of the word and how it gets back to Athens. And what did the Apostle Paul say about Athens? He writes, here the great philosopher gathered students who were passionate about pursuing the fundamental human questions. What is justice? How do we acquire knowledge? What is the source of beauty? He writes, there are other schools in Greece that coalesced around such figures as, I can't say all of them, Epicurus, Democritus, and many others, who believed the world could be understood through sustained rational inquiry, and each of whom offered particular answers to the mysteries of the cosmos. He says, what distinguished Plato's academy, however, was doctrinal pluralism and a variety of intellectual approaches. There were no easy answers. And that is a very left-wing approach, and it's not right. It's not getting to the core. It's not getting to the right foundation. I mean, that's kind of this free speech absolutist point of view. Well, just use human reasoning, and they'll observe the physical universe to try to derive truth, but they can't answer the moral questions. They want to solve those problems, but setting the clock back to those Western philosophies and even looking at the founding fathers, that isn't getting to the fundamental question. It's not getting back to the basics. The answers are not in the Greek philosophers. I've been researching that a bit for the Principles of Living class at Armstrong College, a college that truly is revolutionary, as I'll comment in just a minute here. But you read the stuff and it's just, it's like these men just writing in their diaries. Well, what makes that true? Well, some Greek wrote it 2,500 years ago. It's just some man and his musings, and he wrote it down, and well, the text has been preserved by that one person. It's not like the Bible at all, that was written by dozens of authors and is divinely inspired and all lines up with itself. The real revolution in education was started by Mr. Herbert Armstrong. God started it through him with Ambassador College, and today it's Armstrong College. You can learn about that at thetrumpet.com. But on the wall, it's engraved, and this is at Ambassador College in Pasadena. It says, "The Word of God is the foundation of knowledge." There is no new university that is using that as a slogan, as a phrase. The Word of God is the foundation of knowledge. You have to get back to that. And that's what the world tomorrow is about. Building on the right foundation, not some crazy Greek philosophers. In an article written back in 1963 by Mr. Armstrong, it's titled "This World and What's Prophesied for Tomorrow." And he talks about the world tomorrow and this perfect world that's ruled by God. And it's built on, again, the right foundation. He writes, "People will gradually begin to realize that they now have security. They now have good health. They now feel good. There is peace everywhere. Smiles and happiness on every face. Competition is banished and cooperation has replaced it. Everybody pitches in and tries to help everybody else. Everyone will be busy, happily employed in activities they enjoy. There will be a totally new system of education, a totally new science. Men will have come to realize that the Bible and the revelation of basic knowledge from God is the foundation on which all right knowledge is built, the concept through which all facts are viewed. People will shake their heads in dismay, wondering how they could have been so foolish as to have supposed such ridiculous fables as evolution, how such nonsense as the philosophies of Socrates, Plato, and Aristotle could have been regarded as high and dignified knowledge. Yes, people will be forced to find the true values, forced against their wills to be happy and to find life so interesting and satisfying and rewarding that they will enjoy every moment of it. They will not be forced into personal conversion and salvation, but they will be forced to know what is the true way, and there will be only one religion, that of the true God. But that will not be any longer this world of 1963 when he's writing it. That will be the world tomorrow. And that is the real revolution. That's the solution to education. Getting back to the Bible. And that's, you can learn more about it. Mr. Fleury was talking about in one of his messages about the envoy that's produced for Armstrong College and the history that's in there and showcasing how great this school is, because it's built on that right foundation. The Bible is the source, the foundation of all knowledge. And if you have that, then you're on the right course, and then you can build from there, and you can find the answers to world events. You can find the answers. You can understand where these events are leading and what they mean and how you should respond to them. God wants us to do something, to react to what we're seeing. That is what we're picturing here when we are pre-recording these shows. We're keeping the Feast of Tabernacles. I mean, there's a lot of detail about it in that book, The Wonderful World Tomorrow. If you haven't read that, please request that. It's written by Mr. Herbert Armstrong, and it paints a beautiful vision of what a perfect world will be like under God's government and under his rule. That is all I have time for on today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for watching. If you have any comments for the show, send those to td@thetrumpet.com.